When things were hard for Anna as a child, and they often were, she disappeared into writing and reading. She left behind what was hard for a world that was hers, a world where she had power, voice, and words, a world where she made up the rules and created what she wanted. That world was her salvation. Eventually, Anna turned that world into her livelihood. Today, Anna is a writer, an editor, and a creative entrepreneur. She teaches writing to women who want to share their stories and live fully self-expressed lives. Her first book, The Creative Doer, A Brave Woman's Guide from Dreaming to Doing, is for female creators, activists, and magic makers. There's so much in this conversation. If you want to connect to your power and share your truth, this interview is for you. Hi, I'm Daphne Cohn, founder of the Creativity Habit Collective, where artists and makers come together in community to get what they need so that they make what they must through intimate gatherings, circles, teaching seminars, workshops. It's a place to form deep connections, friendship, and get all the support, love, inspiration, and courage you need to go out into the world and share all of who you are and what you make. You can learn more at thecreativityhabit.com. And you're listening to the Creativity Habit podcast. Today's guest is writer, creativity mentor, and feminist, Anna Lovind. Some things we talk about are the trial and error of sharing vulnerably, how to create safe spaces within the fear so that you can do what you need to do despite being scared, honoring your natural rhythm and creative cycle, getting back into your body even when it doesn't feel safe, and creating from your heart instead of your head, and striving and what to do when it's running and ruining your creative work. May it inspire you to make your thing and change your world. Welcome, Anna, to the Creativity Habit Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
It is a delight. So I recently finished your book, The Creative Doer, which came out not too long ago. And I want to dive into a lot of the ideas that are in there. And I want to start with if and how writing showed up for you as a child. And also if photography was part of that.
So Okay. Yeah, well, writing... that one's easy because writing has always been a huge part of my life ever since I learned writing. Reading as well, I don't see those two as separate. As a child, like growing up in a dysfunctional family with abuse going on, writing was always my way to... I think both create like a separate world, a safer, better world for myself, and also just to like release some pressure in a difficult situation when I didn't necessarily have the right words for what was going on, but there's still this need to express, which I did. I wrote lots of poetry and stories and just journal after journal. And it was incredibly important to me. I can see that now looking back. It was a survival tool. Photography became a thing like in my teens. I think it has to do with, we were fairly poor growing up. I mean, like relatively poor because we live in Sweden and it's not, I mean, we had food on the table, but relatively poor. And writing is always available. I mean, it is very democratic in that sense. You just need pen and paper, basically, and the skill, obviously, to write. But photography, that's a whole different story. I mean, you need equipment. This was before the digital age, so you had to process the photos, and that was a whole thing in itself, and it was really expensive if you couldn't do it yourself. So I started exploring photography through school, and that became sort of a new window into the creative world, the world of expression. And it's very essential to me. It's a way of like expressing myself, obviously, but it's also like it's beauty hunting. It helps me to be present to the world I live in, to look at the world in a certain way.
There's two things I want to ask
first about the writing piece, because one thing you said is you don't see that there's a difference between reading and writing. I think that's an interesting statement. Can you just say a little more about that?
Yeah. Well, it is a different thing, obviously, because reading is taking part in what someone else has written, and writing is creating your own expression. But for me, those two were so closely linked when I was a child. Both of them were portals into different worlds. Like, I could escape. It was almost like I had this secret door that I could almost at any time enter. It was ridiculous, and people were like shouting around me, and I would be utterly lost to the world. And that was my salvation, really. I had that escape. And it was the same feeling for me when I was reading and when I was writing. It was like the same door somehow into this world of words, like where I could create something that was so much better and stronger and healthier, maybe, even though I wouldn't have used that word then, but something that made sense. And so I don't know, I still think about it that way. And also just the aspect of nourishment, because in order to be a good writer, I know this, I mean, I work as an editor and as a writer myself, and I know this, that there is no good writer who isn't also a good reader.
And then using writing to create a better world for yourself. And I know you just said you wouldn't have used those words as a child, but so the writing, in the same way as reading, was this way of not just entering into, but inventing a world.
Yeah, exactly. That is a sense of power, I think, when you find yourself in a situation where you are powerless, as you do when you're a child and are being abused and it's not being taken care of. You're powerless to change that situation usually. But in the creative work or in the creative worlds, you do have power. You have your voice and you have your words and you can create something out of it, and it is only yours and you make the rules. And that is incredibly empowering. Even if you don't know that that is what you're doing, it still empowers you. And it still helps to keep you sane and make sense of things.
Okay, I have a couple things actually I want to ask about that. So one is this idea of it gives you this power. Is that what then led to today, where so much of your work is, it feels like, around women finding their power through the sharing of their own stories and through their own creativity?
I think so. Looking back, I see that red thread running through this whole journey to where I am today. I think it's almost like magic. Creative expression can empower people. And I think writing in particular is very useful in that regard, because, like I said before, it's democratic, it's available, and you can create healing with it. You can create connection with it. For me, when I was a kid, it was about survival mostly, and finding an identity beyond being abused and frightened and all that. But as I've grown older, it has become about so much more than survival. It's about expression. It's about connecting with others, creating together with others. It starts with that one simple thing, you know, just grabbing that pen and writing and expressing yourself through that medium. It has stayed with me always as that perfect tool. And now, I mean, now I work with it. I've created Write Yourself together with a bunch of other women, which is all about using writing as a tool for healing. I'm still in awe of the work.
Let's look at it from this place. Like, yes, writing, there's so much power and there's the healing. And it's not just writing, of course. It's, I mean, you're focused on writing because you're a writer and that's what you teach and that's what you do. And yet, like, your book is for creatives. It's not geared specifically towards writers. And so keeping that in mind, this idea of when you write or when you make something, that it's only yours and you make the rules. We don't feel that way a lot of times when we're creating. After growing up with these are the rules and this is the way to do something, how do you begin to shift into, no, this is mine and I make the rules?
Wow, yeah, that's such an important question. Coming into your creative life is so much about just unschooling yourself. I think I was lucky, that's a strange word to use in this context, but I was lucky in the sense that I always had that incredibly strong connection. Maybe because of necessity, because that's how I survived, but I never lost that. I never lost that sense that this is my room. I enter here and I wield this power in here. I never lost that. I get that you come, if you come to the creative work sort of as an adult or even maybe as a teen, you will likely come with a lot of baggage that will get in the way. The idea of needing to produce, the idea of needing it to be perfect, the idea of needing others to tell you whether it's useful or good enough or whether it's worth pursuing or not, and so on. It's a whole lot of things going on, and we internalize all these voices as well. So even if someone else is not actually giving us critique, we might still be hearing it, that inner critic and the perfectionism and self-censoring that we have going on. But I think of that as just part of the reclamation of the creative life, because I don't talk about creativity as just the actual writing or the actual painting or knitting or whatever is your thing. I don't talk about techniques that much. I talk about the creative life, you know, living as a creative person, viewing the world from that perspective, like being in the world as a creative person and giving yourself and expressing yourself in a creative way. And that's not limited to the things that we usually call creative work.
That really opens something up, because as I mentioned to you before we hit record, that this idea of what is it to live a creative life? How do we use our creativity to not just, to not only make the thing that we want to make, but also to craft the life we want to live. This sense of this is mine and I make the rules, let's then take that one step further into our life. And in crafting a creative life, that gets even more complicated.
Oh, yes. Oh, goodness.
Yeah. So if you can even just walk through some of what you have done to own that in yourself and to know that it's yours and that you make the rules.
Well, creating the space for myself as a creative being and like shaping my life in a way that like suits me, a life that feels like my own, that has been like a much greater challenge than just owning that little space inside that I step into for writing. Or like you say, it's a huge project. It's a life's work. And I think it's okay that it is. I don't think there is a five-step process and then you're there securely inhabiting your creative world. I don't think that's how it is. I think you have to reclaim it daily. For most of us, that's the case, because there's so much else going on inside and outside telling us, no, that's not how you do it. But for me, I'm very much a learning by doing person. So it's like I sometimes feel like it's exhausting. I have to make all the mistakes, you know, to find what actually works. But I do eventually, you know. It's like, okay, so that didn't work out so well. And let's look at that. Why? Okay, so I was focused on producing instead of creating. Okay, so let's bring that awareness into the next project and so on. You know, you just like reclaim one piece at a time and you learn by doing, and it hurts and it's cumbersome, but I mean, that's part of being human, I think. I don't see how we could step into this work, especially not as grown-ups, and undo a lifetime of conditioning, like in one fell swoop, or through one online course, or through reading one book or whatever. And then we'd be like perfectly comfortable creating the life we want and need. I don't think that's reasonable to expect. And I don't mean to sound pessimistic at all. I just think it's a process, and it's a life's work, like I said. And that's not necessarily negative. It's just what it is.
Well, and it's like, if you thought right now, my writing is as far as it will ever go.
Yeah.
It would be disappointing. It would take the life out of it. But knowing that there's so much more to your writing to discover, it's the same with life, right? There's so much more to discover as we figure out what it looks like for each one of us.
Right.
To live a creative life.
And like, it goes in both directions. Like, the more space you can create for yourself in your own life to be the person you are, in your relationships with others, in your working place, in your home, the more authentic your voice is going to be in your writing or in your painting or in whatever expression that you have. And the other way around as well. Like, the writing and the painting and the photography and all of that. Well, it can be a safe space, and it can also be like a playing ground where you can try this out and try that out, and you can fail a little bit and your life won't be like crashing down around you. You can explore a whole lot and do things that you wouldn't be able to do in your real life, so to speak, life outside of this creative space. But then you can come back to that life outside with that knowledge and with that confidence that comes with failing and getting up again, and failing and getting up and learning and having tried something that you might have been afraid to do and so on. And then you step into your everyday life with that, and that adds something. It's in both arenas at the same time.
It's such a beautiful way to show how they support one another. The failing, quote unquote, failing in one will give you the confidence to create more, to try more. And then you bring that into your life, and this, the courage it gives you in your own life, and then what that does to your creativity. I want to bring this to something specific about who you are, the type of writer and teacher you are, which is, as a woman, looking very deeply at what it means to be a woman and to be creative as a woman. And what you were just saying about this experimentation and this exploring of who we are through our creativity, I want to bridge that with the idea of being a woman and exploring that. So I'm going to read something that you wrote in The Creative Doer. You said, "From an early age, we learn to view ourselves from the outside, always monitoring the way others see us in order to present ourselves favorably and please the male gaze. This doesn't just consume a lot of energy and reduce available cognitive functioning in the brain. It also creates a split inside, a disconnection from our own experience in favor of the perceived experience of others. The originality of our creative work is directly related to our ability to see the world from our own unique viewpoint and stay true to that viewpoint." So how, given that we learn this from such an early age and it's a part of the culture, it's the water that we swim in, how do we begin to see things from our own internal viewpoint when our internal viewpoint is so affected by all that we've taken in?
I think the first thing is to talk about it, recognize it, And that's why I write about these things. That's why I wanted to write about the creative life from the perspective of a female creator. Because I found that most discussions about creativity take on this universal outlook, which can also be very useful. But it doesn't address these particular issues. If we don't address them, we don't even know what we're up against. I didn't know about these things before I started like doing the research for this book. I was a feminist before, and I've been a creator all my life in one way or the other, but I wasn't aware of how all these different aspects affect me, affect us. For instance, this part that you read about self-objectification, just having that name to describe that process that every woman I've ever talked to recognize, that constant monitoring of oneself from the outside. Men do this too, some men and to some extent, but not nearly the way women do it. And this is like one thing, one aspect of how growing up in a patriarchal society affects us as female creators. It's just one aspect of it. And making it concrete, like talking about it like we are doing now and writing about it, it makes it possible to get to work on it. And my experience is that the best way to work on this is create safe spaces to begin with. This is not going to be a quick fix, obviously. This is something we've learned. We've internalized it from a very early age, and everything we see around us encourages that behavior. And often we're not even aware we're doing it until you start talking about it. So it's not a quick fix. But there is something that happens when you create, when you consciously create a safe space for women creatives. And usually this needs to be a separatist space. It needs to be only women, because we're taught to monitor ourselves and to present ourselves favorably before the male gaze. And it doesn't even matter if you're straight or if you're gay or queer. We're still taught the same rules, because structurally, collectively, men are in power. So it makes sense to please the ones in power, and women please through being perceived as likable and beautiful. And well, that's basically it. Likable and beautiful. So just like allowing yourself to be in a space with women only will open up something in that regard. It will make it safer to play a little bit and to fail a little bit and to just try things without knowing how they're going to end up, which is a big thing for most women too, like that good girl thing that we are taught in school. You follow the rules and you're rewarded. Well, that doesn't work in the creative world. You need to fail a bit, you need to mess up, and you need to learn from it and then try again. Like, that's the process, basically. So that's where I start. That's always where I start. Create a safe space. Find your women. Find your sisters and start exploring. It's the learning is in the doing in this case. You can't just like read about it and think about it and understand it. It has to be in the doing.
And you also speak about this idea, not just of creating a safe space with a community of women, but looking at what it is to feel safe as you do the work. Because you had written, what do you need in order to feel safe enough to move forward anyway? Never mind the 10th step or the 19th. Mm. Now, right here, what do you need? This is one of the most important questions you can ask yourself ever in your everyday life, as well as in your creative work. So this idea of safety is both in a collective setting, what do we need with each other to create a safe space? But it's also when I'm on my own, doing my own work by myself, what do I need right now to feel safe enough to take it?
Yeah.
So I think about that, and I think there's this whole, what I want to ask about that in particular is this whole idea of we do it even with the fear, like we are scared and we do it anyway. So how do these come together, the fear and needing to feel safe?
Right. Usually they're seen as antithetical, like they're opposites. You don't go for safety. You go for like courage and bravery and being bold. You're encouraged to, yes, we feel fear, but then we do it anyway. And I think it's another one of those things that isn't necessarily helpful for female creatives. Because it's easy to encourage someone to be fearless if you are, for instance, a white middle-class male living in this world where a white middle-class male will face very few threats, like in his daily life. It's a whole different story just living in a female body. Like, we all know fear. We all know what it feels like to walk home at night and there's someone walking behind us. Just that one scenario, like, it tells it all. We are not safe in this world in a female body. So we need somehow to address that. We need to work harder to create a sense of safety than a man might, like add skin color to it or add like socioeconomics into it. And it's much more complex than what we're talking about now. But just for the sake of this discussion, there is this difference just between being in a male body and being in a female body. Just start there. What do you need in order to feel safe in this body? Because you need to be in the body in order to be creative, in order to use it as a tool for your creative expression. It's a part of the creative life to deal with fear. Because it's part of the creative life to always create new things, to step into the unknown over and over again. That's inevitable. If you're going to create something, you have to step into the unknown at some point or another. And that will always bring up some fear. Those classical advice, you know, just like headbutt the fear and do it anyway. Most women won't be able to do much with that. That's my experience. It might sound cool, you know, like go for fearless, go for broke, just don't protect yourself, just all in and jump and the net will appear and all the things we say. Most women won't be able to do anything with that. Most women will stop themselves long before that leap. So what I find is that what do you need to feel safe enough to move forward is a much more helpful question. I ask it because it's more helpful. And we need things that are helpful. We don't need things that sound cool. We actually want to be able to do our work in a way that is sustainable and that we can keep doing. We need tools that we can return to over and over again. And that question is such a tool. What do you need to feel safe enough to move forward? And like that second part of the question is essential in order to move forward, because that's what we're looking to do. It's what do you need to feel safe enough to do this work? That's what it's about.
So, because a lot of your writing is, and you talk a lot about this, is writing that is honest, writing that is from the gut, from the body, not so much from the mind, not having it have to sound smart, but having it sound true. And so when we write that way, when we create that way, and then we put it out into the world, again, there's the fear. What are things that you do to feel safe within that in order to share as honestly as you do?
Well, it's a little bit of trial and error here as well. It has happened that I have shared something and then I felt afterwards that, okay, no, that was too vulnerable. That was too naked. And then I sort of have to evaluate before I take the next step and feel into where those boundaries are. But what I do is I focus on the writing because writing is my safe space. So I can be pretty bold, pretty vulnerable in my writing and still feel reasonably safe, at least safe enough to do it. And that's what we're going for. So there might be a lot of things that I would not be able to say to someone, but it's perfectly okay for me to write it. I mean, that is why I am a writer. Writing is how I express myself. That's my, like, that's the channel that is most open for me.
And then when you go to share it, like, it's one thing, like you say, to write it, you can write very boldly and share things that you wouldn't necessarily say to somebody. Is that different when you go to share it?
I suppose it is. I think I have a few like informal rules about the sharing. I don't share like the bleeding wounds. I share things that I'm able to talk about without falling apart. I don't write about my family struggles like in a way that will expose them in a way that they haven't asked for. I also share in the arenas or the forums that I feel safe in or safe enough. Like Instagram for me is such a place where I feel safe. I usually feel like there's a huge sisterhood on that platform. People are very supportive, and it's not that everyone always agrees with what I'm saying, but there's a lot of support. I've written in magazines and newspapers before, and I would choose what kind of writing I would share in what kind of publication and that kind of thing. I respect the level of vulnerability I can handle. I have a lot of respect for that these days. It's not about like pushing those boundaries. It's not about that at all, because I know already that I am pretty bold. And even if I weren't, even if I was super sensitive, everything was super tender for me to share, I would still respect that. Like what is possible for that person to share. Well, like for my sister, for instance, a few months back, she removed all her male followers on Instagram because she wanted to post and write about like her female body and dancing and sexuality, and that felt too tender to do. So she created that space for herself, and she respected that feeling. And I think that's how we do it.
Well, that's another great example of how we get to make the rules.
Right.
Ours. So this brings us really well, really nicely into this idea of being in one's body, because I want to ask you specifically questions about being a creative and being a woman, because this is such an area of expertise or just even interest and study for you. Mm. And one of the things you mentioned earlier, and you've written a lot about, is the importance of being in our body in order to create. And then at the same time, how as women, it can feel unsafe to be in our body, or at least unfamiliar if we have not spent a lifetime cultivating that connection. Mm. The first question I have for you around that is, what is the difference when we create from our body, when we're in our body and not just in our head?
Well, I'd say that it is through our bodies that we connect with our humanity. As humans, we connect with stories. We connect with other humans. Concepts and theories and elegant thoughts can be entertaining or interesting as well, but what we really connect to is stories and the stories of other human beings. And it doesn't have to be like your personal story, but writing is always about creating stories. And I don't think you can access those stories, the true stories, the stories that really touch us, unless you're connected to your own body. Like if we write from our heads, just using our thoughts, and I think we use like a tenth of our capacity. I think most of it happens in the body, like in those subtle signals from your gut or your intuition or whatever you like to call it, in the way your own body responds to your own art or to other people's art, like when your the hairs, the back of your neck stands up, or you have this shiver down your spine, or you just like something lights up inside. It's all bodily reactions that's connected to something much bigger than our bodies. But we experience it through our bodies and we express it through our bodies. And this is, like you said, it's new territory for most women, depending on where you come from and what your experiences are. Most of us have like alienated our bodies to some extent. Also, we've been taught, like I talked about before, when you just get traditional schooling, it's all about writing from the head. So it's just that we're never encouraged really to create in that way, or even to think of ourselves in that way. Like our bodies are just vehicles to carry around our heads and our important thoughts. That's often how we view it. So just like recognizing the importance to begin with, and then like reconnecting, that could be quite a journey.
Yeah, I want to ask you a little bit around your journey about that, because you've written very openly about being sexually abused as a child. And
yeah,
can you talk about your personal, some pieces of your personal journey of getting back into your body? Like how did you do that?
Yeah. Well, it's a long and ongoing journey, and there are so many things I've tried over the years, and I think the most important thing, like the thing that connects all of these different things I've tried, has been around recognizing needs, physical needs, recognizing and being able to name them for what they are, being able to recognize them as valid and relevant, and also boundaries. Where does myself end and where does another person start, and what am I comfortable with, what feels safe for me, and what feels okay, and what feels pleasurable even. And I think what I've realized as I've grown older, I'm 42 now, and I think what I've realized now that is actually a huge relief for me is that I don't have to strive for perfection in this relationship. I don't have to strive for, you know, just loving and adoring my body and being like perfectly at peace with how I look or how it feels or all the fear and PTSD that is still going strong in my body from time to time. I don't have to buy into that whole narrative about loving oneself. It doesn't have to be about that. I'm not sure I'll ever get to that. But what I am looking for right now is peace and a little bit of mercy, and not blaming myself, and just paying attention to basic things such as needs and what brings pleasure, what feels good, what feels bad, you know, that level. I don't strive for the perfect, enlightened, loving relationship to my physical self, but I do insist on living with it, you know, fully. I have this body. I have this human form. This is what it is to be human, to have a body, to have a physical experience of life. And I'm going to be in it. I'm going to experience it. It's not going to be comfortable given my background. It's not. most of the time, honestly, it's terrifying and painful and uncomfortable. And then that's the experience. You know, there's so much less judgment on my part now than it used to be.
There's so much here, because there's just one phrase I want to repeat, because I think it's really such a, it's a rich phrase, which is wanting just peace and a little bit of mercy. That's so different from, I think one of the things that I'm hearing and what you're saying is this idea of fully loving the self, of loving all of it, that sometimes that can become its own burden.
Yes, for sure.
And so what I hear in those words, peace and a little bit of mercy, is a way of making space for the experience to just be the experience.
Yeah, that can just be another kind of striving towards perfection. That idea of that we need to love our bodies and love ourselves. And we don't, actually. We just need to find a place to coexist in peace, to not harm, to not oppress, to not avoid. Like, as a survivor of sexual abuse, I spent most of my teens and my years as a young adult dissociated from my body. That's the medical term for it. Like a disconnect in order to create safety. So that's where I am, like down in the trenches, just insisting on staying connected. And I don't always, like I still, it's still part of the work to just notice when I disconnect and then bring it back. So that's the work. And I'm just accepting that, that's the mercy part, I guess. Just goodness, that's enough without the burden of it be this having to be perfect as well. No, it doesn't have to be perfect. It's a bloody mess, but it's the work. And it's working, so to speak. I am in this body. I am writing from this body. I am creating from it. And I'm learning. And it's deepening. And that's enough. It's more than enough.
So when you're creating from this body, and in your body, you're feeling whatever kind of discomfort you're feeling, and but you're staying with it, as you say, you're living in it fully.
Yeah.
You're fully in your body. Is that enough of a safe space for you? Like, it's not that you need to get to this place where you feel at peace necessarily in your body. Like, you may have these fears and these discomforts, and yet somehow you can still create in that space.
Yes. And to know my limits in that regard. And if it's too much, then I need to pause and maybe do something that I know helps settle myself, like just being with the dog for a bit, or drinking some hot chocolate, or wrapping myself in a blanket. So I don't push it. But I have learned to tolerate a lot of discomfort. And I know that it's not dangerous, or it's not a problem to create from that space. I don't have to be like in this perfect, peaceful Zen mind in order to be able to write, for instance. Goodness, no, that's not how it works at all. We write from where we are. That's the authenticity part. We create from where we actually are. We speak the truth of where we actually are. We speak the truth of our fear and the discomfort and the body and all the stories that come from that. And when you react, when fear comes up, that's when you actually know that you're onto something. So that's also a way to look at it. Like when you react, when your body reacts, it's because something is happening in your art.
Okay, let's look at that then through the lens of story, because that is, you talked about that a little earlier, Anna, and you talk about the importance of telling our stories, and that this, speaking the truth of the fear, speaking what is right now, is sharing our stories. What is it that is so revolutionary? You talk about it, this as a revolutionary act, What is it that's so revolutionary about the sharing of our stories? How does that change not just ourselves, but the world in which we live?
Well, for women, it's the fact that our stories have been erased and ignored and overlooked for millennia. We haven't been part of the history writing. Our lives has not been seen as relevant. You know, the particulars of living in a female body, like menstruation or having children or breastfeeding or sexuality from a female point of view, none of that has been seen as relevant. If that has ever been written about, it becomes women's literature, in the case of writing. So when you sort of claim that, well, actually my story is relevant, this is what made up my life here as a female human, and because I'm a human, it's relevant to other humans. That in itself is a rebellious act, to say that this is not genre art. This is mainstream because women make up half the population. And our perspective, our experiences, and our desires and our voices need to be heard in order to create a world that's relevant for women, a world that is inhabitable for us and that is not just shaped and formed from the male experience and the male preferences and desires. There's so much in that on a collective level. But then, I mean, also on a personal level, writing your stories is a very, very powerful way of making sense of your life and seeing patterns, like I was talking about earlier, that sense of empowerment from being the one creating, being the one putting it together, being the one who get to say where this ends and how it ends. But then also, you know, when I talk about writing the truth, telling things from our bodies and from our stories and from our what's true in the present moment, I don't always talk about telling your particular story. The truth isn't necessarily like the biographical facts. It can be a fictional story or it can be an abstract painting, but it comes from a place of like you're digging where you're standing, if that makes any sense. Like you're mining your own ground and using the material that your life is made of to create something.
Yes, that makes complete sense.
Yeah.
The other thing that you said that's interesting is when we share our stories, one thing that happened to me that I found really fascinating was I had written about being a mom and someone I know said, I've never had kids, so maybe I can't be part of this conversation. And my response was, no, you can be because you're human. And so you understand. You may not understand the specifics. You may not have been through the specifics, but the biggerness of it is just what it is to be human. And there was something that was so liberating for her in that. And I think that is something that even as women sharing their stories, I may not be able to relate to the specifics of your story, but I can connect with the humanity, and that frees up me to recognize and be in my own humanity.
Yes, so true.
Okay, I really want to make sure, there's two things I want to make sure that we get to, so I'll do them both now. One is the idea, because you already spoke to it a little bit, but this idea of striving. I find I am a striver, in so many ways. I've been looking at it really deeply. I'm like, oh my gosh, it shows up everywhere. Talk about what that means in terms of our creativity and women, and why it's important to be aware of it and possibly shift it.
Yeah, I'm a striver too. Very much, which I suppose is the reason I write so much about it, because that's my own journey of unlearning, relearning. the striving, I mean, it's connected to all the things we learn about how to be successful, and maybe more accurately to how to be viewed as successful. It has to do with productivity. It has to do with being busy in this world where busyness is sort of equated with success. When you bring that quality of striving, and striving is not just in the doing, it's in the mindset. It's how we view work and how we view value. Like, what is valuable? Can a process be valuable? Or is it only if it results in a product, and preferably one that you can capitalize on? That's the kind of questions that we need to bring into this unlearning process. When you bring the striving, this quality of striving, into your creative work, the creative work, the way I see it, is actually more of a co-creative work. It's not just me thinking things up and then making them according to that idea. I think of creative work as co-creation between me and whatever the powers are that grant us ideas and inspiration and energy to actually do the work, and the information that we need, the guidance that we need to move forward. And when we bring the striving into the creative work, we shut that part down and we end up alone. And it actually becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, because we end up alone and then all the work is on us. And it becomes pretty heavy lifting, and we have to work so hard to bring it to completion, to make the deadline, to finish that product that we can't really value our work unless we have. That's such a huge loss in so many ways. It's the process is no longer enjoyable. And since the creative work, the creative life is like 95% process, that's a massive loss. If the process is no longer enjoyable and meaningful, infused with at least a little bit of that magic that we are all looking for. I'm not even sure we can call it creative work anymore.
Begin to shift out of that then. I mean, it's so deep. It's our value, it's worth, it's success, it's all of that.
Yes, it is. And it's, I think it comes right back to what we were talking about before, giving ourselves permission to learn and to fail and to try. That's a huge one, because when you're striving, you don't have time to try things out. You can only do what like already been tried, the what's already been tested and proven. You can only do it in a way that you know you will be able to pull off, like, or succeed in. So you will never be able to explore new work. Creating some kind of permission for yourself, like bringing it in as a part of the work, even if it means you have to schedule it. Like the first half hour of this session, I will spend just messing about, not producing anything. I will intentionally mess up, or I will just do writing exercises that with no particular goal to them, apart from just getting my creative juices flowing. A couple of years back, my daughter is very much into drawing. I noticed how she was 10 at the time, and I noticed how much perfectionism began creeping into her work and how much it stole her joy. And it became so much about producing a drawing that looked like the way she had imagined it. And when she couldn't, and she usually judged she couldn't halfway through, she threw it away. So she never completed anything. It wasn't fun anymore. She eventually almost stopped doing it. And so I thought, I mean, there's no point in talking to a child about these things. So I figured I had to show her somehow, or had to sort of like create a space for her where she could allow herself to be messy. And I also knew that I needed that space, so it was a perfect opportunity for me as well. We had enough space at home, so I went into the basement, and I covered the floors with paper so we wouldn't have to be afraid of making a mess. Then I brought out these huge watercolor papers and bought these really cheap colors so that we wouldn't be afraid to use them, you know, because not be too precious about using these expensive colors. And we mixed them with a lot of water so that you wouldn't be able to control them. And then we went to work with our hands and paintbrushes and whatever we found that we could use. Like the rule was that once you started to feel like, this is beginning to look good, or this, oh, okay. And then you sort of like hold yourself back because you become afraid of ruining that thing that looks good. So the rule was that once you get that feeling, then you make a mess of it. You either just like roll it up and roll it back out and see what happened to it, or you just splash it with water. Or my favorite one is actually, I do this on my retreats sometimes, you exchange your painting with the one sitting opposite of you. Then you get to continue painting on that one instead. And that's so distressing for most people, but it's also very freeing. It's like just to experientially learn that nothing happens. Nothing dangerous actually happens.
Yes.
When you try this and you fail, within quotation marks, because it isn't a failure, it's just like another piece of learning. And nothing happens when you make a bit of a mess. If you're a doctor, obviously, that could be, but not in the creative process. This is where you get to try things out. This is where you get to make a mess. And from that sort of more relaxed space, you can go back to that like detailed drawing or whatever, but you will come back to it with a lot more space around it.
Yeah. That is great. And so speaking of giving oneself permission, this is the last thing I want to really dive into, which is this idea of the cyclical nature of creativity in life. And it ties in also really perfectly with striving, because striving doesn't give space for the cycles, the natural cycles that we go through as humans, as women. So what does that look like to honor the natural cycles in creativity? And what do we do if we feel like we're in this place where, no, we actually do need to produce things pretty consistently? How do we honor the natural cycle of there's times for activity and times for rest, times for going faster and times for going slower?
Yeah, I love this question. I think it's a pretty persistent and consistent pattern in the creative process that you go through like this. You get the vision, you begin planning it out, you get to work actually bringing it into form, and you complete it. And when you've completed it, there's this decrease in energy. It's like you step into winter almost. Nothing is blooming. Because you've put all you've got into that project, and it's been birthed and it's done, and now there's this fallow phase. Nothing is blooming, and that's when the striving usually kicks in for most of us, because we haven't really been taught about this cyclical aspect of life or the creative work. I hadn't, for sure. And that's so strange, given how the female body works with menstruation and like our whole body is cyclical. And still, we don't ever talk about that aspect of life. And I mean, it's all around us, the way the seasons shift, the way the fields will yield a crop and then they need to rest for a certain amount of time. But it's somehow we don't think it applies to us. And that's like the obsession with productivity that just comes from the birth of industrialized society, basically. But so I'm at that phase right now, actually. After the book, I felt like I can't squeeze anything out of myself right now, even if I do try at times. I know this very well, and I still sort of think I can find a shortcut. I can rest just a little bit and then I can get back into it. But it really doesn't work that way. And that is, I must say, the danger of bringing, of sort of making your creative work your source of income. Because maybe then there won't be space enough for you to honor that fallow phase. Maybe you can't stop creating for a month or 3 months or whatever it takes. So that's always something I talk about with creative entrepreneurs, to create some sort of structure around that that allows you to create or to make money in a way that can still honor that, the cyclical process. It's challenging because there's nothing there. And that's, for most people, I'd say for most modern people, really, that's really challenging. The emptiness scares the shit out of us. All the stuff can come up there. Like, okay, so it's over. I will never get a new idea. Or that was just a fluke. That was a one-time thing. I'm not actually a creative person. Or just the fear of being seen as slacking or like being lazy. Like, why am I not working? All sorts of stuff can come up, all the self-doubts, and we forget like the empty space is, that's where everything happens. We're so quick to fill the void when actually everything I've ever created have been birthed in that void. I think that's true for everyone, actually. You know, when you're in that dark place, that sleeping face, that the ground is black and open and super fertile, but we don't see things growing, so we doubt it. But that's where the seeds are planted. And if we force it, they're not going to make it. Or we're going to miss them altogether because we're filling the void with something else just in order to fill the void. So there's that trust that needs to be cultivated, like learning to recognize these different faces and honor them.
It's a great analogy, because it is, when we put a seed in the ground, it is all about trust. And if we don't trust it and we think, oh, it's not growing, put in more seeds. And we just, then nothing will be able to come up because it will be too crowded and we'll be messing with the soil and all of that. So it's a perfect way to hold this image of the importance of honoring the natural cycle of life, our personal cycle.
Right.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautifully said. Okay, Anna, the last, I'll have one more question at the end, but before that, I want to first have people know where to go to find you. And you'll see when you go to Anna's website, it's beautiful. And when I first learned, Anna contacted me, I knew nothing about her. And a lot of times people will contact me about being on the podcast. And most of the time I say no, because I have a lot of people like that have been recommended. And there's a lot. I'm not necessarily looking. But when Anna wrote to me and then I went and checked out her website, I knew immediately, like, oh, wait, no, this is someone I really want to have on the podcast. Her words are, and I can just speak it to you. It's always funny, like going back and forth between speaking to the person and speaking to the guest. But I'll just speak to you, which will, well, let me first say the website, because that will take me somewhat into the gratitude. But so the website is Anna Lovend. That's how you say it with an English accent. And there's an American accent. And then there's the Swedish way of saying it. A-N-N-A, and then Lovind is LOVIND.com. And from there, you can also see how to find her on Instagram and all the other things that Anna's up to, courses, everything that she's offering. And so then that brings me into the gratitude. And I started to say about your writing, so I'll finish that and then go into one other thing. But your writing is all that you have been sharing. It is so much the essence of life. Like it's like you take all the extra, you peel it back, and then you give us what's underneath that and what feels most true and what resonates most deeply as a woman and as a human. And I love that about your writing. And the gratitude that I want to express from today, this is in your writing, and then I heard it so much in our conversation today, is the attention you pay to not just your craft, but to your life. And because of that attention, everything from your writing to what you share to our experience of you, it's all richer because of that. So I'm really grateful for that.
Oh, thank you so much for that, Daphne.
You're welcome. The last question for you, I feel like it just, what do you most want to say to, we've been speaking to it this whole time, but I feel like maybe there's something else to women as creatives. Like, what would you like them to take with themselves? What would you like me, what would you like every listener who is a woman to take with herself as she goes out from this conversation into her world, into her creativity?
I think it would be that whatever you are able to do right now and the circumstances that you have, like in your life, that's enough. To be an artist or to be a creative, it's not about all in always. It's not about giving it all. It's not about like being absorbed in the work and coming up for air 3 months later. It can be 15 minutes in the evening or when the kid is watching, well, whatever they're watching these days on their devices. It's okay to do it like that. It's enough to do it like that. We can do our work like that. And we have to, because that's our lives. You know, we don't have to think that our lives need to look any different in order for us to start our creative work. We can start telling our stories from that space. We can start telling stories about that space and about that life and what it's like to try to create from there. And that's really the most important part. And we don't have to wait for anything. We don't have to model it on the journey of someone else, especially not if their circumstances are really different from yours. We can do it just right here, right now, as it is right now. We can create from this space and from this moment in our lives. And that's enough. Like, trust me, there's enough there to work with.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Anna.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed our conversation.
I'm Daphne Cohn, and you've been listening to the Creativity Habit Podcast. For more conversations with brave and experimental artists, and to learn more about the collective, head on over to thecreativityhabit.com. You can follow The Creativity Habit on Instagram at Daphne Cohn. You can support the podcast and the artists on it by going to iTunes Podcasts and subscribing, rating, and reviewing this podcast. And thank you for listening. Ooh, the sunshine.